Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your Owl Post for the week is freshly delivered, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is every single week, finally in sweater weather, Drea Kaufman.
Hello!
Hello, how are you enjoying your sweater weather?
I like sweather weather. I would have thought...
Yeah, sweater weather? Sweater weather.
It's weird to say. It's hard to say.
It is.
No, I definitely live in the wrong place, because I would much rather be cold than hot, like... And any day. So I'm loving this time of year. It actually was chilly on Halloween here, which hasn't happened for a very long time. So it was really interesting.
Well, exciting too, because Drea, we got a couple emails from listeners around the world, which
Yay.
Was very fun. We got an email from Clara, and she wanted to email. She said that she had actually given us a 5-star review in iTunes, but she's in the French iTunes store, so we wouldn't see it. And so she wanted us to know how much she appreciated our podcast and that she makes it part of her workday every day, which is really awesome. And she was really excited, too, because we've reached the Half-Blood Prince, which is apparently her favorite book in the series. And so she's also a hardcore, she says, a henny shipper. So, which makes sense to me. I have always been that way as well. So this is the first book also that she ever read in English, which is super cool. So thank you so much for writing us, Clara. I love getting to hear the fact that we have listeners all over the world. And, you know, like, that's really neat. Like, I don't care what if it's your favorite Harry Potter book. You know, I'm just glad that you like Harry Potter.
I love the relationship nickname, the shipping name. I don't know that I have ever heard that. That's super cute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. I do. I'm a henny. So, we also got another email from a listener there in Australia, which is great. I will not do the accent, even though I'm really
though
tempted to.
So tempted to do the yes. Australian accent.
Yes. Ella said that she's been binging the podcast and listening to 4 to 5, 6 episodes per work week, and she's finally caught up, and she's really enjoyed our podcast and the way that we do the in-depth conversations about some of J.K. Rowling's real topics is refreshing, she said. And she said that if she had iTunes, she would give us a 5-star review. So thank you, Ella, all the way from Australia. We really appreciate that. I've always wanted to visit Australia. I love the Australian people. I love your accent. And so thank you. Even though it was just an email, I read it in the accent, so I appreciate it.
And then we also had someone on Instagram share Michelle Gammon. I probably butchered your last name. Sorry about that. She said she's finishing up the third book, and you guys are amazing. 5 stars if I could rate it on iHeartRadio. Thank you so much for doing this podcast. So,
that's great.
I always like the little notes. They're super fun. Also, I did not know you could not rate on iHeartRadio, so I also learned
either.
Something. So,
Well, if you are in a place where you can give us a rating, please do, especially on Apple Podcasts. And if you're, you know, in another store, write us, let us know what you said. So because we love reading your thoughts out on the show, and we just appreciate that people listen. And it's really neat the fact that we have these people from all over the world listening. That's incredible. So thank you so much for each week tuning in to Owl Post. It definitely means the world to us. You can find us on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. So follow us there. You can talk to us there as well. Dre and I love conversing with people. You know, use that hashtag Owl Post so we'll see it. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. That's another great way. If you're all over the world listening to us, that's another good place to be able to interact with Dre and I as we post the episodes there every week. And then you can email us. Go to thenerdparty.com/contact and choose Owl Post, and that email comes to Dre and I. It is a great place to be over there on thenerdparty.com because you can see all the other podcasts that are going on the network. So we're at chapter 6 in the Half-Blood Prince, And this is called Draco's Detour. And to me, what was really fascinating about the beginning of this chapter, Drea, is just all of the bad news that we're getting. And it's kind of continuing a trend where we're getting from the outside, it's kind of seeing everything that's going wrong. And here specifically, it's in the wizarding world with the things that are going wrong. Places like Diagon Alley, places closing at Diagon Alley. You know, they finally found Igor Karkaroff's body, you know, with a dark mark that had been set above it. So he's dead. You know, so it's not a great time in the wizarding world. Like, it's getting really scary. And I think she's doing a very good job in the beginning of this book and even this chapter, continuing to bring it closer and closer to home, just how bad it's getting.
Yeah, it's kind of, everything is on edge, and we hear about so many things that cause you just to go, what? I mean, we hear the ice cream man in Diagon Alley is gone, or lady,
I mean, Florine Fortescue, how could he be gone? Where are we going to get our ice cream now?
I know. And then also we hear that Ollivander is gone. And I love that the kids are like, well, where are they everyone else going to get their wands? And people are like, oh, well, they'll go somewhere else, but this is not a good thing.
Well, and they even mentioned the idea of, like, if he fell into the wrong hands as well, like, how bad that would be. And so, you know, I think, you know, it's really, it's just a bad thing. Now, there is some good news with their book lists that have come. Harry also got some great news that this year he's Quidditch captain. And that means he'll also get to use the prefect's bathroom now. So, you know, which is really cool. I mean, we know how awesome that place is.
Yeah. And I like that. It's funny that I don't really like that a Quidditch captain or a sports player has the same level of authority at the school as the kind of head student regulatory body. But sure.
Well, I don't know if he gets to take away points or anything. He just gets to use the bathroom. So
they
They
said you have the same level as a prefect.
Oh, equal status. Okay.
Equal status as a prefect. So, I mean, maybe that's it. But even so, I'm not a big fan of that. But, you know, in this case, I think it's a good thing for Harry. And I like that Dumbledore sort of made that happen for him, knowing he sort of messed up the last time around. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of nice.
And it makes me wonder, does the head of a house get to choose who the Quidditch captain is be? So like McGonagall, right? Maybe choosing the head, which makes sense that, you know, I mean, her and Dumbledore have a very close relationship, and so.
And I'm sure if he asked her to do that, it's not like he asked her to make Ron head of the Quidditch team. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
it is
he
Harry
asked
Potter.
Someone she probably would have picked anyway. So I think ultimately it worked out. But yeah, I have a feeling that Dumbledore sort of made that happen.
Well, and this is also interesting too, because, you know, we've got Fleur, who's been there, and Bill has been coming around the house much more often, and they're kind of talking about, you know, some of the frustrations that are happening in the wizarding world. And, you know, he works at Gringotts, and he's saying, you know, he gives Harry a bag of money, and Ron's like, hey, where's my money? And he's like, this is already Harry's. I just got him out of his vault so he didn't have to stand in line. And, you know, because of the tightened security, people are having to wait at the bank, you know, maybe an hour or up to 5 hours to get their gold. And so this is, you know, everything here is pointing towards a really, I don't even know how to put it, but like,
it's really
just
gloomy. Everything is really bad.
That's a good way to put it.
Everything is just really bad right now. Like,
everything is awful.
Yeah, it is. And it's like the things that should be even pretty easy or simple or not affected. It's really fascinating for her to show you the effects this is having on such a large level that you may or may not have thought of in the first place.
No, I think that's really smart. You know, it's a great way to put it. The fact that what she's showing us here is that there is an impact of Voldemort being back on every segment of the population and every part of the population. And so we've seen that effect.
Going to the bank.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Everything is just horrible right now. Like, everything is 5 times as hard as it should be.
Can't even go to the bank without it taking 5 hours.
I can't get any ice cream afterwards because it's closed, you know? So, it is interesting that going back to Diagon Alley this time, that they have the cars again, the ministry cars, which is great. And they mentioned that the reason that they can do this is because it's Harry, and he's been given top grade security status. And so basically, Harry's kind of like a president, where like he's got an entourage that are around him when he's going someplace, you know, like he's got orders, and like, you know, later on it's Hagrid too, who's there to help protect him. So, I mean, in many, it is almost every time Harry is going to be moved, it's like the motorcade for a president.
Yeah, it's like a circus. Every time they have to do something, it's like this whole big production to do it. But I do love that they let Hagrid sort of act as security instead of sending a bunch of Aurors. And I love Hagrid's little callback to like, you know, this just feels like the old days, you know, like it feels familiar. And I love that they keep letting Hagrid sort of play this part in his life, about, you know, sort of this protector and this filling in father figure like, or fun uncle like, role, and that they're really relying on him caring and being invested and being just a ginormous fellow, to protect Harry. I think though my favorite part of them getting to Diagon Alley, because there's a lot that sort of happens and it fuels this gloomy perspective, but I think my favorite is when they get there and they are walking through the Leaky Cauldron, and Hagrid's like, you know, I'm not today, I'm on important business today, and they're like, aw.
Yeah.
Well, disappointment.
It kind of feels like a ghost town.
It does, but I do think it's funny that he has to like tell the bartender he's not there to drink, and just sort of fuels me a little bit. Makes me not really feel funny. So alone, maybe. Yeah. But I love that, you know, I love that he always like announces he's on hot official business, mm-hmm. and things
official
like that.
Official Hogwarts business, yeah.
Yeah, but I just thought that little interaction is so cute, just because you can see how seriously he's taking this, and you know that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, this is part of his life. And I just think it's such a rich moment, and it's just kind of mm-hmm. cute when you need a little bit of cute.
Well, and you know, we see, you know, the dreariness of Diagon Alley, you know, places are boarded up. Obviously, Fortescue's ice cream parlor's closed, you know, Ollivander's is not open because he's gone. It just has a feel, like you kind of mentioned, this doom and gloom feel there. And, you know, people are selling things like, you know, amulets for, you know, defenses against werewolves and dementors and Inferi and those kind of things. And so as they're going to the different stores they need to go to, they end up running into Draco and his mother at Madame Malkin's. And the conversation does not go well. And wow, if Harry hasn't grown some cojones since, I mean, like even more so than before, like Harry is very brazen and very, I just brazen. I wouldn't even say bold. He's just brazen in this conversation, especially with, you know, Mrs. Malfoy. And I mean, I guess he has every right to be. He knows who their father is. He knows that he's a Death Eater. And, you know, I mean, he basically just throws down the gauntlet of saying, like, we're not going to pretend anymore that you guys aren't what you are.
I feel like this is, though, one of those teenage moments, right? This is this is that moment where you're kind of reminded how old they really are. Because often we treat them as much older than they are. And, you know, they're wise, wise beyond their years and things like that. But this is that moment where you're like, they're not, because while Harry decides he's not going to put up with any of that kind of political or nicety BS anymore, he picked a fight at the wrong place at the wrong time. And, you know, the adult in me the whole time just kept thinking, you still have to get your robes. This is going to be uncomfortable for you. You know, like you've made the shopkeeper uncomfortable and she's who has to help you. So, I mean, there's just, it's one of those moments where you're like, ooh. I mean, I applaud the brazenness that you bring to the table, But it's not the right place. It's not the right time. And like Hagrid said, when they leave, like, they're in the middle of public. They're not going to do anything here. So, you know, he didn't get all riled up. And that was the adult reaction. So it is that moment where you're kind of reminded they're still really young and don't quite have maybe the tact they need in the current political climate, especially as it's kind of getting more and more out of control. They don't need to be pushing it more and more explosive.
Yeah, I like to think that this is Harry Potter being very un-PC at this moment. He's not being politically correct or like you said, just kind of even thinking about maybe what's the wisest course of action, which is a little bit funny. You know, but in some ways, what's interesting is that there has been a drop of pretense. You know, like everybody has had to pick a side. And what's fascinating here is that we have spent some time with Mrs. Malfoy now, and her only pretense this year seems to be the protection of her son. So that's interesting to bring in here. What is fascinating is to just watch her be a nasty pants back. Like, she says some really mean things about Harry in the sense of, oh, yeah, he'll probably just be joining his, you know, dear Sirius before I'm reunited with Lucius. So basically saying, oh, yeah, well, he'll be dead before I see Lucius again. And it's like, okay, so she's not taking the adult road either. In fact, maybe she even took a lower road by throwing out that kind of thing. So it's two people here in the end not being adult, and one of them actually is an adult. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's one of those things where I also don't think she would have engaged if Harry and Ron hadn't entered Wands Drawn,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
I feel like she was, and I'm not trying, just to be clear, I'm not trying to defend or justify her. I'm just saying, I feel like she made bad calls there too and escalated the situation, but I don't think she would have started the situation.
Oh, correct. Yeah.
So I just think all in all, that was, I think we don't have that moment in the movies, or we might have that moment in the movies, but it's not nearly as loaded as it is here, because it gets very, like, everyone's tensions just keep getting ratcheted up. And ultimately, they end up costing the robe maker the sale of Malfoy's robes, which is also kind of a dick thing to do. Like, I know they didn't, like, do it on purpose, but that was definitely the consequences, and they don't really ever apologize. In fact, I think that this little section ends with her saying that she seemed relieved when they started to leave the store.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's not really the impression you want to give to somebody, but...
Yeah, it's funny because... we go to Madame Malkin's and we have the confrontation, and then they go to some other stores, and then they end up finally at Fred and George's, which is very funny. I love that they have the big sign in their window about how you should not be worried about you-know-who. You should be worried about you-know-poo, the constipation sensation that's gripping the nation.
Well, and I love that Mrs. Malfoy, I'm sorry. I love that Mrs. Weasley is like, oh my God, they're going to get themselves killed.
And then Ron's like, no. And Harry and Ron's like, no. They're this is hilarious. So
it's the much needed, like, laughter. Mm-hmm. It's the much, you know, mm-hmm. it's what you need when times are tough. It's why, like, when we're in a depression, people still go to the movies and stuff like that, right? You still need a relief of some sort, right? And so,
yep.
In this case, I love her, the way she describes their store as like a firecracker on the street, because it just stands out so much. And this is one of those moments where I think that the movie really did it justice with the big moving hand mm-hmm. and hat and like all of that. I thought it was really great. So I always kind of envision that now when I read it. But yeah, their store seems to be popular, and there's lots of stuff missing from the shelves, and it's awesome.
Yeah, I think you made a really good point. You know, this is the place in Diagon Alley that kind of has the feel of what we remember Diagon Alley being, especially like in those first few books when they would go, right? These vibrant shops, you know, and this one is bringing that levity in a world that's, you know, not great. You know, I mean, they have patented daydreams, you know, like exclusive 30-minute daydream, perfect for class time, you know, only side effects or vacant expressions and minor drooling, you know, that kind of stuff.
And I love that Hermione says something about, like, this is really advanced and impressive magic. Mm-hmm. And they're like, you can have one for free.
Yes. I love that. They ask her what happened to her eye, and she's like, oh, it's a punching telescope. And they apologize for accidentally leaving that. And then they give her this yellow paste that if she puts around her eye, the bruise will be gone in about an hour. So, you know, she'll be back to normal looking Hermione soon. And it's so cool because, you know, they have this great store, and not only do they have all of this great stuff that's fun, but their magic, like you mentioned, and Hermione sees this, is so well done. They have things like, you know, shield charms that the ministry has come and bought because they're able to protect people. I mean, some people aren't good at this kind of magic that work at the ministry, and so they've actually bought a lot of their product because it works, you know? And so I think that's something that they should be super proud of, and you can tell that they are. This isn't just about having fun. Like, they're actually helping people, too.
Yeah, and I love that they take a moment. And they say, like, you know, even some of their people can't cast a shield charm, but, you know, they didn't have you teaching them, Harry.
Yeah.
but, yeah, I think it's a really interesting perspective that something that started out as kind of like a, hey, you could play with your friends, is like, no, this has a real world practical application. That they're buying up by the, you know, the boxes full, the carts full, the pallet full, whatever quantity, crates, I don't know, bins, take your pick of quantity measurement here, that they're just, you know, buying it up, and they want coats and cloaks and all kinds of stuff. And, you know, they mentioned, like, it's not going to stop against any of the, you know, unforgivables, but at least it will stop some, you know, some jinxes or, you know, small level curses. And it's also kind of a way, I think she points out the fact that how underprepared the ministry is for what's happening to them, and how they're not as skilled as they probably should be. And how I sort of equated it back to the last book, where the ministry stance was a book level understanding of certain things was sufficient. And now I think this is her way of kind of pointing out that that's really not sufficient. You need a practical application and practical knowledge of some of these things to really be prepared, which just kind of makes you feel even more on edge about this is the organization that's supposed to be protecting everyone, and they can't even protect themselves. So, you know, we've attacked the media, now we're kind of attacking the policy, and it goes on and on. And it's just so interesting how little things she uses to point that out. And at the same time, she is, like you said, allowing the Weasleys to do something good beyond just make people happy or feel good or forget about what's happening. So it's such a powerful chapter and a powerful thing we've done here with the Weasley twins. And it's also her, I'm sorry, I'm just rambling now, but I also love that it's her way of saying that formalized education isn't necessarily for everyone. They are being wildly useful and helpful and successful without completing their time at Hogwarts, right? And I think that's something that is so important, that there's different skills and different types of learning and different ways to apply your learning, that, you know, nowadays where everyone goes to college and that's what you kind of have to do, that I think this is almost like her way of saying it's okay if that's not your path. You can still be really successful and make a valuable contribution without having to go and get a degree and all of that.
Well, and I mean, what it shows, though, too, is that, I mean, they are very good at magic.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
They could have done well in school if they wanted to.
Right.
You know, it's not that they don't understand this stuff. They're just using, they're applying magic in a way that other people hadn't, and they have the talent for it all as well, because they're willing to put in the hard work to do these things. It's just not academically, but again, like you said, here they're making people laugh, but they're also finding ways to protect people at the same time. It's like they're doing a great job, and I love their conversation with Harry about how, you know, that he can have anything he wants in the store anytime, because, you know, he's the one that gave them the startup loan. Without him, they would never have been able to do this. And so they respect him. And it just kind of shows, you know, it's one of those moments where Harry was able to give that money up because he doesn't need it. but also what it meant to him. He didn't want it, and now that money means something, you know, like even to him, like it there's a beauty to that for him, like that it would never have had if he had just like thrown it in his vault and never wanted to use it, right?
Right. Well, and if we remember, the money really came from winning the Triwizard Tournament, right? Where we kind of first had Voldemort really resurrect, and this whole thing sort of got kicked off, and we lost, you know, such a good-hearted character, right? And I feel almost like he feels a little bit of vindication for that, that he was able to take the money and turn it into defense against Voldemort, right? Which he never would have been able to figure out how to do on his own. And I think that also speaks to that power of building your tribe and doing things together, and that, you know, he didn't know what to do with it, but somebody else did. So I think it's just great. And I think he finally feels more comfortable with everything, and especially seeing the good they're doing. I think that helped him feel less uncomfortable about Mrs. Weasley finding out that he's the one who bankrolled them, or, you know, I think he knows they're on the right track. And so he kind of has a little bit of confidence that he giving them giving them the money was the right thing to do.
There's this funny little moment too between the twins and Ginny, where they're looking at her and Hermione are looking at the love potions and asking if they really work, and they're like, "Yeah, they work." And they're like, "But I hear you don't really need them, especially since aren't you dating like 5 different boys at this point?" And I just kind of love the ribbing that they're giving her, you know. And, you know, she talks about how she, you know, dumped Michael Connor because he was just a, you know, a little turd.
Loser.
And, yeah. And she's dating Dean Thomas now, you know. And so, but it's really cute because it's such a brother-sister thing to do. You know,
I'm super proud of her for standing up for herself, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're giving her crap, and she even goes so far as to turn around to Ron and be like, "And I'd appreciate it if you didn't share my business around. Thank you very much." You know, she was so sassy. It was wonderful.
And having, you know, I am a brother, so there's it. It does feel like there's a protectiveness to them that they have. Because I remember, you know, I was protective of my sister and just wasn't going to let anybody date her. So, yeah, they had to be, you know, good guys to be. And my sister was smart enough to not date anybody who wasn't worth it anyway. So that helped. But then I love, too, that, you know, she wants one of these little pygmy puffs, which are apparently really cute and cuddly and furry, and they just seem like almost like Harry Potter tribbles, I guess.
Yeah. Yep. That sounds about right.
And the last really funny thing is that they won't give Ron anything for free. And so apparently he just drops all the boxes, throws them the finger basically, and curses them out and walks away, which I thought was kind of funny. It's like the relational stuff between the family, I feel like she does really well.
She does. It feels real. It feels like a family you want to know and be a part of, but at least know.
Yeah. And then this is the moment where we see Draco in the street by himself, and Harry gets Ron and Hermione underneath the invisibility cloak, and they follow him.
Which is too small for all of them now.
Yes, it is too small now. So, and they follow Malfoy to Bergen and Bork's, where he is having a conversation that they get to hear through the extendable ears. They don't really get to hear everything, but he's reserved something at Bergen and Bork's, and he is he is trying to fix something as well that he cannot bring into the shop, but he wants to know how to fix it. And so that's really interesting too. We start a mystery here that's going to play out now, you know, throughout the rest of the book.
Yeah. And it is interesting too, because Malfoy up to this point has sort of been like kid nasty, right? He's always been just kind of like the things he says and what he does are very juvenile. And this is kind of a moment we see with the shopkeeper that mirrors his father. And you sort of feel him becoming less juvenile, like nasty, and more towards that genuinely like genuinely ill-intentioned, right? So it's interesting because I think it's a little moment of evolution in the wrong way for Draco too. You know, we're seeing him starting to dabble in that in the way he treats the shopkeeper. And there's a moment where she notes that the shopkeeper bows to him as he did to, you know, to Lucius the other time that Harry had seen them in here. So I think it's just a moment where we learn a little more about what's happening to Draco's character without really having to know Draco's character too well. So, but I do love what Hermione does in response to everything. It's she's getting brave and I dig it.
Yeah, this was really funny to see her get from out from under the cloak, run in and pretend to be Draco's friend and wanting to buy him a birthday present and being like, oh, I just want to make sure in case he has anything reserved. And at that point, she, you know, gets yelled out of the building. But it is really smart, the fact that, you know, she tried it. And I love that Ron's like, well, you could have been a little less obvious. And she's like, well, then you can do it next time, master of mystery. And that, I love that they're bickering all the way back to the shop. And it does turn into kind of a funny moment. But like you said, we just start off this mystery now. And they're like, what is going on with Malfoy and what is he trying to do? And this is also the reason that throughout the rest of the book, Harry is going to have a bad feeling about Malfoy. Like
his sneaking around is making mm-hmm. him really suspicious. Yeah. It also will be interesting when we get to the end of the book and figure out, or near the end of the book and figure out what it is. And we kind of solve this mystery a little bit. Looking back on this scene, I think will also be pretty funny in terms of why she got kicked out of the store so quickly. Right.
Yeah.
So it'll be really interesting to see what happens. But I do love too when they get back to the store that they try to convince Mrs. Weasley that they were there the whole time. And she just didn't look very hard for them. We were in the back. You just didn't do a thorough looking. And, you know, I do love that, especially because I'm 90% positive nobody bought it. So,
yeah, it is pretty funny. We've got next week, we've got the Slug Club coming up with Chapter 7, but if anybody wants to catch up with you, Drea, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's Kaufman.
And I'm on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, Vero, under the name MattRushing02. I'm here on the network. I do Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills as we talk about Star Wars each and every week. And, you know, there's so much Star Wars coming up, so definitely a good place to be. You can find me on the Track FM network. I do two shows. One's The Orb with Chris Jones. When we can record, we talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Find me on the 602 Club, which is our general geek show, which is a lot of fun. We talk about all the fandoms we love. Drea is about to be over there in the next couple weeks as we talk about Frozen and then Frozen 2 coming up.
So that should be fun.
That mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm just ready to build a snowman. And then last but not least, you can find me talking about films through the lens of faith with my good friend Courtney on Cinema Stories. But thank you so much for checking your owl post.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.